Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, your guide to traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, where we talk about living the life that you want to live, where you want to live it.
All right, everybody, welcome to another Borderless Podcast. This is James, and today I have an interview for you, and it is Matt Wilson. He has a new book coming out. It's called The Millennial Travel Guidebook, Escape More, Spend Less, and Make Travel a Priority in Your Life. Thought it had a lot to do with what we talk about here on Borderless, and might be interesting to hear more of a millennial perspective about some of the, you know, how you can make location-independent income and all this type of stuff. So I hope you enjoy the interview. I will say, first of all, we screwed up, and somehow both my microphone and his microphone weren't on. So it's being recorded through our computer microphones. So you can hear it, and it's fine, but I admit it isn't the best. So we kind of screwed up on that, but that will not happen again. I hope it doesn't take away too much away from the podcast. I do want to go over real quick, because I also just came out with a blog post for a lot of people that ask about, you know, moving internationally. You know, I'm here in Mexico, so a lot of people ask about buying real estate in Mexico. Are there any loan options? And there are some loan options for people in Mexico, but I'll just go through some of them real quick that I put in a blog post. And, you know, this is, I'm concentrating on Mexico, but there are similar things like this all over the world. So, you know, if you're thinking about buying real estate abroad and you're not a, you know, citizen or resident there, there still are some options for buying. You know, so first of all, one of the great parts about real estate in the United States still today is the 30-year fixed mortgage. When, you know, the way I look at it, when you're buying real estate in the state, in states with this 30-year fix, the biggest asset is actually the mortgage itself, because it's at such low rates. They have all these different options where, you know, you can put little to almost, you know, to no down sometimes, and low interest rates for 30 years. Now, this has to do with a lot of things, but you know, the world that the dollar is the world's reserve currency. They're able to finance a lot of these, you know, that type of thing. But it's really not a, you know, dependent on the market, right? The United States can do this, you know, also because of insurance that's paid for with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So the government is pretty much subsidizing these 30-year fixed mortgages. Other countries don't have that. So yeah, I mean, if you want to buy outside of the United States, you are probably not going to get anything close to what you're going to get on a 30-year fixed in the United States. So you have to come to terms with that. So now that you know that, what are some of the options? Well, you have private lenders. There are people that offer loans in Mexico. I don't know about other countries, but here in Mexico. But you're going to be looking at probably about 40% down, rates between 7 to 10%. And 10 to 15 year terms. All right. They also have admin fees and upfront fees and stuff like that. So as you can see, it's not as favorable as some of the other ones you might find, but I think probably closer to what would be called like a market driven, you know, interest rate system and loan system. Also, you have hard money lenders even outside of the United States, but they're going to be not very good terms. You're going to need to have, you know, collateral, sometimes double or triple the amount of the loan that you want. So, you know, and you know, the terms are probably not going to be as great. So, you know, these are used for bridge loans, or if you want something that, you know, you need to close on something right away, you can get cash and they won't check your credit or anything like that if you have some sort of collateral. Also, you have equity loans, you know, HELOCs and things like that. And you know, as I wrote, a HELOC is good. If you have equity in a loan, it's a good idea to have a line of credit ready to go, because you never know when business opportunities come, real estate opportunities. You want to have that credit there that you can jump on different deals that maybe other people can't. Also, self-directed IRAs. These are a great option if you want to, you know, internationalize your assets. If you don't want to be stuck in the U.S. financial paper market, if you can get a self-directed IRA and use that for all kinds of different things. I mean, there are some restrictions of what's created, you know, that what will create a taxable event. You know, for instance, if you're going to buy real estate with it, you have to buy real estate that is just for investment. You can't live there. You can't do anything like that. You can't have anything to do with it, and you have to hire a custodian to take care of it. So, yeah, I mean, this is another option. Again, it's one of those things that I think is probably a good idea no matter what. If you have an IRA, if you can make it a self-directed IRA, it's really going to open up a lot of options for you instead of just mutual funds, ETFs, stuff like that in the U.S. Also, life insurance policy. I've done a podcast about the infinite banking concept in the past, and I think I'm going to be doing a lot more of that. So basically, if you have a whole life insurance policy, normally you have to set it up, ahead of time to be like this. But what you can do is you take out a whole life insurance policy, and then eventually you are able to borrow against the face value of that, and your policy continues to get interest. And you're borrowing against yourself, again, kind of like a hard money loan. There's no credit check, no questions asked. You get that money right away. And then you can use that to finance your activities. And you're basically paying yourself that interest. And at the same time, your policy is going up in value. So that's a very interesting concept. And it's called the infinite banking concept. I'm going to be doing more of that. And hopefully, people enjoy that. I think it's a good option if you structure it correctly. And also, of course, seller financing. So if you're overseas and, maybe you can't put together a loan, a mortgage, just try to be open and negotiate with the seller and come up with some different terms, maybe a lease to own, they'll try to figure out what it is exactly that they want. Maybe you can barter something with them. Whatever terms that they want, it may be depending on what they want that money for. Are they looking to retire on that money, or do they need a lump sum to go do something with it? These are all things you can talk to them personally, cut out the banking fee by just doing a seller financing, and mix and matching all those different types of sources of credit, right? So you can do all kinds of things. It's all up to your creativity and how, get that information from the seller. And try to make the loan work, right? Try to make the deal work. And so, another thing I was going to mention, I've just been revisiting this book. This is a book I got a while ago, but when you're in these types of negotiations or stuff like this, I would definitely recommend Secrets of Power Negotiation by Roger Dawson. I bought this book a long time ago, but it's probably the best book I've ever bought on, negotiating. And, there's all kinds of things in life that you need to negotiate, and, that'll really help you out. We'll launch into this interview that I did. And, if anybody has any questions about buying real estate or anything else for that matter, please remember that I do calls. I do consultation calls. You can go to the website, borderlessblog.com, and check that out. And I'd be happy to help you, point you in the right direction. I have a lot of contacts and experience in this kind of thing if you're looking at getting yourself or your assets international, may be able to help you with that. So that being said, here is the interview, and I will talk to you soon. Borderless. All right, everybody. Welcome to another Borderless podcast. Of course, this is James Guzman, and I have with me Matt Wilson today. And we're going to talk about his book and a lot of stuff that he's putting out there. His book is called The Millennial Travel Guide. And that is coming out next month, right?
Yes, at August 13th.
August 13th, The Millennial Travel Guide, Escape More, Spend Less, and Make Travel a Priority in Your Life. All right, and he also is the one of the founders of Under30Experiences.com, as well as he has his own blog, MattWilson.com, and his own podcast. So I think we have a lot to talk about, and you'll like to hear what he has to say. So thanks for coming on with me today.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. So the first, I first ran across your work with, you tweeted out, you had a blog post about all your friends moving out of big cities. And then I also saw that Andrew Henderson tweeted that, and that's how I really ran across your work and stuff like that. And that's a lot of stuff that we talk about, just the fact that when people have the freedom to, they're able to escape the rat race that they're in a lot of these big cities and stuff like that. And you're talking about how with the coronavirus, it actually helped you push along and make some decisions, and you could see how that would help other people. So maybe you want to boil down how that could be. You're actually talking about how this whole crisis could be something positive in your personal life.
Sure. I mean, so I've traveled all over, you know, working as a digital nomad since 2012. I spent a lot of time in Costa Rica and came back to the States recently only to be quarantined. I am a reluctant homeowner, and I'm about to not be a homeowner anymore, which I'm very excited about, and here in Austin, Texas. But the, you know, what I've just seen through quarantine and COVID and even all the civil unrest going on in the cities, I mean, my high achieving friends who are, and that's not to say I'm only friends with high achievers, but many of the most high achieving ones, of course, have been in San Francisco and Los Angeles, New York, and, you know, these big type of cities. And personally, those cities are way too much for me. I did my time in New York, and I'm glad, you know, I chose Costa Rica over that, or at least a kind of secondary city like Austin, where it's just not too big. There's plenty of green space. But still, being this close to a city center, and I don't know, I just like to be connected more with nature and the outdoors. I just had my first kid. So just thinking about, you know, we really want to go back down to Costa Rica at some point and stay for a while. But for now, we're here in the States, and yeah, would really just like to be a little bit more free, I guess. So we have a big road trip across the United States coming up where we're going to spend a month. But I'm just seeing, like, friends specifically in Santa Monica, where they said it was like being on an island because there's so much traffic all around you. You know, you're blocked in. You got the coast on one side. You got traffic all around you. And to be quarantined in that type of environment, those are the people who already were at their wits' end, I believe, with city life, because, you know, you got to have $100,000 a year coming in to be able to live in a city like that. You can, of course, do it for less, but it's difficult, you know. And so these are the people that are just, they've got some big job and they're keeping up with the Joneses. And, you know, my one friend in San Francisco, his place was like 450 square feet or something like that. And this is a guy with a lot of responsibility at work, and that's what he has to show for it. And so I think people are just going to look for more space, especially now after COVID.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that we're going through a really transitional event, you know, a transition in the global economy, really. And that, you know, we'll see what this looks like on the other end of it. But in the meantime, as we can see with unrest and this type of stuff, especially in the U.S., I think that, you know, being in the city is definitely not where you want to be, you know, just for self-sustainability and for your own kind of peace of mind, you know. So I'm in a small colonial town in Mexico, and it's kind of, you know, we have very decentralized the food that I get. I know a lot of the owners of different places around, and so, you know, it's a good size, but it's still kind of, you know, local in a way that I know my resources, where they're coming from, and I'm not worried about any type of, you know, big, you know, like, you know, in the United States when they were having problems with meat, for instance, or something like that. I mean, a lot of towns, if you are in a city and, you know, you only have Walmart and Kroger or something, and or some, you know, Walmart or whatever, and they have problems getting there or some sort of a problem with that type of thing, then you only have one option, and then you're really in trouble. But so anyway, I think that might be you know, when people see riots or other or protests and all this, and you know, we still have the stimulus checks coming, the enhanced unemployment, and this type of thing. So we'll see as you know, they've really pulled the rug out a lot of people's jobs and stuff like that. Once that stuff comes, we'll see how the cities really hold up. I think they're just starting the evictions now. So. yeah, I think that in those type of thing, a lot of people think, God, I got to get out of the cities. And especially like you're talking about California, New York, with the tax purposes, you know, we talk a lot about, I've talked to a lot of different accountants about internationalizing yourself with taxes and even within the United States, you can start within the United States. I think a lot of people, it's common sense. They're, you know, they're in New York and they're like, why am I paying so much taxes and so much money on rent when I could be doing the same job and the same thing, especially with remote work now, you know, in Texas, for instance. So.
Totally. Yeah, you got that. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you got that 3% or so tax in New York City. Yeah. The top income bracket in California is like 13%. So I definitely think that people are going to start moving to places like Austin. And in that article I listed off, you know, Nashville is another place that's really going to grow. Tennessee doesn't have any state income taxes, et cetera.
Yeah. So that's a good point. So what other, I mean, I haven't been in the States for a while, but you know, for people that, you know, they're not really looking to take the leap internationally in the beginning, what cities would you say right now for you are still kind of acceptable? I mean, you're in Austin, how's that over there? I mean, I heard that there's really a big influx of people. Is that becoming like a problem with traffic and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, well, with COVID and nobody going to the office, there's not a whole lot of traffic right now. So it's probably the Austin of 10 years ago, which everybody, you know, which nobody really complained about the traffic then. Traffic, you know, they talk about traffic, but it's nothing like New York or LA. So people get here and they're like, wow, this is amazing. For me, it's too hot in the summer. I mean, I'm used to Costa Rica where it's gets to 88, but that's it. It stops. But the 100 degrees, forget it. But other than that, it's an awesome city. Tesla is now coming here. They just announced, and yeah, it's going to continue to grow. And that's why I bought here. We're definitely going to see the increase in property values. And in my opinion, unless there's some type of global collapse or something like that. But if I was in San Francisco, I'd absolutely move to Austin. It just gives you a huge pay raise, much less cost of living, and it's just more laid back here. So Austin is pretty cool. I mentioned Nashville for, you know, I don't know if I would live in Alaska, but in the summertime, I'd go check it out. Or, hey, I'm a big skier, so I would love to spend some time up there. I don't think probably most of your listeners, that might be out of their comfort zone as far as adventure goes. But, yeah, what else do you have? Reno, Nevada. Now, I'm trying to name places like where there's value. You might think, oh, geez, Reno. And granted, I've never been, but you're very close to Lake Tahoe and that whole Sierra Nevada mountain range. If you love the outdoors, I know that's a place where a lot of people are going. And again, no income taxes in Nevada. I don't expect Vegas to grow, right? I think those places probably got a little too overpriced. And yeah, you're going to see or we've seen a Vegas bubble. I'm not exactly sure, but those are some things. Of course, Florida. I mentioned in that article, Jacksonville. This is one of the places if you're into real estate investing, that you're going to see that ratio where you can rent out places and actually make the money that you need to make to cover your mortgage and actually make a decent profit doing it. So this is, a ton of people are flipping houses in Jacksonville, buying up something that's $50,000 to $100,000 and, you know, selling it for more or fixing it up and renting it at a nice ratio. So yeah, definitely. And of course, you know, Miami and all that, but that's people know about those places, I guess.
Yeah, well, as far as Florida goes, I mean, Miami is fun to visit. I don't know about living there. I remember when Tim Ferriss first talked about moving out of San Francisco to Austin, and I wrote a blog post, and I was like, I bet probably in 10 years, he's going to go somewhere outside of the United States. I think there's a lot of people, you know, they're still up there like, oh shit, I got to get out of here. And so maybe I go south, maybe, but I think as things get more remote and, you know, as it becomes easier and easier, and a lot of different reasons, people are going to be considering going international. And so I think that's kind of the first step in what, how that's been working out. But I think, what a lot of people, you know, the first thing that, you know, that I talk about a lot on the podcast, you know, the problem a lot of people have, I mean, all of this they say sounds good, especially if they're millennials or younger. And, but, you know, they're just like, well, I mean, how the hell am I going to do that? I mean, maybe it's easier now because of more remote stuff, but you do write a lot about, you know, practical ways. How can you go about making some money remotely? How can you go about kind of picking up side hustles and stuff like this? So what are some of those that you would say people, you know, should consider if they haven't, or, you know, how can they be making some extra money, try to get more remote? How do you recommend people do that?
Sure. So of course, we have this tremendous opportunity right now where we've all been given these remote work privileges because nobody's going into the office. Now, if you were a personal trainer or a yoga teacher, for example, that's not something you generally would sit behind the computer doing. But now look, you have this opportunity to teach online. And there's just, it's kind of like a forced innovation, if you will. And sure, yeah, plenty of people in the fitness industry that are, normally in-person things, yeah, they were doing their marketing online, but they weren't really making their money online. Or, you know, I was training martial arts in a gym before this, before COVID, right? But now I'm on YouTube channels and getting instruction in front of the computer, and I do my thing in my living room. And sure, it certainly doesn't replace that type of thing, but you know, it doesn't replace in person. But for now, I think it's great, and there will continue to be a shift. The Pelotons of the world are obviously winning, and so if you know. Okay, so a lot of us had 9-to-5 jobs, and now we've been granted remote work privileges. Well, next thing I would say is, can you talk to your boss about, hey, I work at Facebook in New York. Can I move to New Hampshire where there's no estate income tax? And yeah, I can come into the office once a week or a couple times a month if I need to in the future, but can we go fully remote? So that's the first thing I would look at. But then if you have skills, like I was saying before, you know, whether you're a fitness trainer or any type of freelancer, try to reinvent yourself. And, you know, say you were a chef, right? Who wouldn't want to take cooking classes during this time at home? And you can do that type of thing on Zoom. Right? People are starting to garden a whole lot more. And you mentioned, you know, the supply chains and the food that we eat, all these types of things people are getting more in touch with. So this is another opportunity where, oh, okay, well then maybe, you know, you could do some type of consulting if you were in this industry previously, and you can tell people how to garden their own food, right? How to grow their own food. So just think of what the world has changed, and it's post COVID now. And what are these opportunities? So, you know, cycling is another thing. I mentioned Peloton, but outdoor cycling, you can't find a decent bike anywhere these days. And so just thinking about the specific opportunities in this point in time that you can then, sure, market yourself, or, you know, whether it's back to basics, like membership platforms, consulting via Zoom, coaching programs. And also important to remember that it's a down economy. So a lot of business owners are going to be looking to get back with contractors. And unfortunately, the whole employee thing is, you know, a lot of people have been laid off. A lot of people have been furloughed and won't come back. And when these small to medium sized businesses do rehire, they're going to rehire most likely freelancers, independent contractors, because that's a safe bet. You don't have to pay unemployment or if there's another downturn or these companies can't quite afford to bring on new people right now. So I think there's a lot of opportunity just to take the skills that you have, but then morph that and get up to speed with how you can offer it online.
Yeah. Yeah. In your book, you have lots of different of ways that people can make some money. And I like one of them is that I've noticed has been a really good one lately is just flipping stuff online. You know, just with Facebook Marketplace and eBay and stuff like this. I've seen people there, you can do pretty well just finding inexpensive stuff and selling, and, you know, people are buying a lot of stuff online since they, you know, maybe they can't go out or their store's closed or whatever. Like, you know, if you can buy a bike or sell, if you have an extra bike, you know, you could be selling your stuff online and be doing all right. And, you know, you also have dog walking, house sitting. I've done a lot of house sitting, helping deliver stuff, renting your car, driving for Lyft or Uber. I've done that. Join the gig economy. A lot of ways to do that on Fiverr and what's the name of it? Upwork. Airbnb. I've done a lot of that. I've done a lot of videos specifically on geo arbitrage, which I think, you know, in your book you talked a lot about that. Maybe what do you think about that now? I mean, what have you done as far as housing and house hacking and some, like, are there some, I always like to hear different ways that people are able to get accommodation in different places, you know, to be creative about it. What are some ways that you found to get, like, to save money on accommodation?
Sure. So my best was when I was down in Costa Rica and was able to secure a three-year lease on a place. It was a four-bedroom, four-bath villa in a gated neighborhood, you know, backed up right to the jungle, very close to both town and the Pacific Ocean, near a national park. And I was able to, it had two separate entrances. And so my wife and I lived upstairs and we would Airbnb downstairs and it went really, really well. So we, you know, those three years we had the place and we could travel. We had a good local team. We had housekeeper and caretaker, people that we trust. So I wouldn't recommend rolling into some Latin American town and trying to do this without being completely familiar or feeling like a local, speaking the local language, etc. This is definitely an opportunity to be able to do that. You got to be familiar with your local laws, of course, and all of that. But that was a great way to have an amazing place that we didn't need four bedrooms and four baths. There was only two of us living there. So we thought, all right, well, there's a, you know, separate kitchen downstairs and everything, two separate units. So let's have them subsidize our rent here. And then when our families want to come and visit or when we have friends or professional relationships, we want to say, hey, offer them a place to stay or have a big party or whatever, entertain like we used to do in the old days. Yeah, then we had a big place. And when we didn't want to be doing that, all right, then we can make money and save money. And so that was the biggest. Now, of course, you have to talk about a post-COVID world. Those people are the people who bought, you know, vacation rentals, right? Those are hurting right now in a lot of markets. The best markets, though, still are the drive-to markets from the major metropolitan places. So I'm from New York State, and everything upstate, you know, within a couple hours drive of the city, that's where everyone's fleeing New York City, right? Especially right in March when COVID was going on. And yeah, they're buying up places, they're renting out Airbnbs, et cetera. And people want to be in vacation homes with a lake or with the ocean or a little bit more isolated. So those are still doing very well. And you don't have to get on a plane to do them, to get to them.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the trends is, you know, that people are doing a lot more kind of, you know, I don't want to say local, but, you know, they're driving, you know, places that they can drive to. I know that I've certainly been taking trips that I've just been able to drive to. I had planned to go to the States for some things, but I've kind of postponed that for a while, and just trips and stuff like that. There's been places that we could drive to for a weekend or whatever. And I assume that there's a lot of other people that are doing the same just because of the hassle right now. So, and I know another guy I know just bought a boat. He said, screw it. He just bought a boat.
Totally. Yeah. RVs, camper vans, all that stuff. You can't find them anywhere.
Yeah. So in your book, you also talk one question that I get a lot are, you know, a problem that people have. They talk about with their boyfriend or girlfriend. And I see that in here, you've written a little bit about that. What would you, have you been able to help people with that? Maybe if they're, you know, their boyfriend or girlfriend isn't much, as much on board, or how they, can they deal with that?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it comes down to looking at your values and do your values match the person that you're with? And do you have you can have separate values, but you definitely need to have overlapping values. And so, you know, I would suggest, this is something I think from Dr. John Gray, who I've had on my podcast, is the guy that has Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, right? Yeah. This whole series. And I'm pretty sure it was him who talks about writing values together. So what does your relationship base itself upon? And so is it adventure, right? That's one of the ones that I have with my wife. Or is it health? We're both health and fitness enthusiasts. And so then what, you know, you can go down the list on whatever, kindness, right? If we're not being kind to each other, then we can call it, we can point to the piece of paper that probably should be on the refrigerator and say, hey, you know, what about our values here? Does this fit? And so this is kind of a lens for decision-making as well. So if you're saying, all right, I want to start to live off the grid, and I told my wife about somebody who I know who is off the grid in Colorado, growing their own food, but does not have running water or electricity. And my wife was like, no, absolutely not. That's not for us, right? And that's completely fine. But it's about striking a balance. She is up for that type of thing. Or I say camping and she says glamping. And so we have to start compromising. But in the book, I specifically write about, hey, look, if it's an issue where you can't go out and do the things that you love, that motivate you, that inspire you, then you may be with the wrong person. And that's, you know, that's just very, very basic. But it's difficult to detach. And, you know, my wife and I really want to, right now, we have a tiny little baby, so I'm not going anywhere solo. But if my wife says, hey, I want to go to Bali or to Thailand and to go on a juice fast retreat or yoga retreat, or if I want to do a 10-day meditation retreat, well then sure. Yeah. We've set our relationship up. We've laid down the ground rules where, yeah, that's totally acceptable. Where some people might say, oh, that's selfish. But to us, that's, we're taking care of ourselves and fulfilling ourselves so that we can come and we can give to the other person in the relationship because we are fulfilled. Otherwise, you're just, it's two empty vessels and they're not going to get along so well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, one thing I always get asked, because I'm in Mexico, right? I wouldn't be what's considered a digital nomad. I have a lot of digital nomads on and sometimes talk about it, but I'm definitely more of expat. I mean, I'm here and I'm set up and I'm not going anywhere. But one question they always ask me is, oh my God, you know, Mexico, you know, you're going to get shot and kidnapped or whatever. And I noticed you have a whole chapter here, staying safe abroad. So for those type of things, I mean, if people are worried, maybe they're thinking about, well, Costa Rica, Latin America sounds cool, or you know, somewhere, but I don't know. You know, it seems very you know, like you said, you got a baby. So if you have a baby, why would you consider going to Costa Rica? I mean, you know, so how do you deal with that? Like, what are some things, you have several things here that you tell people or kind of recommend that to ease that kind of thing?
Sure. So it all depends on people's comfort zones, right? Some things, like I mentioned, my wife doesn't want to live with no electricity or no water. And to be honest, neither do I, but I'd like to check that out, right? I would like to maybe do it for a weekend. But to answer your question, you got to kind of think what this comfort zone entails. And actually, Gregory Deal, who you mentioned you've had on twice, he told me when I interviewed him, he said, you want to try to shoot for something one level outside of your comfort zone. I think I included that bit in the book. And so, right, when I bring, and I don't want to say anything bad about any different places, right? But would I bring my, she's now 3-month-old daughter to Guatemala right now? Maybe. I would consider it, but I might wait till she's a little bit older when we know that her health is stable and her immune system is really functioning, right? I mean, she's in great health now, but, you know, she's a precious little baby at the moment. And you got to be careful in Guatemala not to get a parasite, for example, right? And sure, I picked up a parasite in Mexico City. Like, that just happens. But I'm more comfortable in Costa Rica. It's a little bit more developed country. But you can go, you know, if Canada is something that is a little bit outside of your comfort zone, right? Or, you know, comfort zone isn't as adventurous as things I'm talking about. Okay, well, go and try to go to Canada. And it's just about challenging yourself and doing what works for you. And so you got to kind of think of the health implications, of course. And especially, again, now with COVID, but then you want to start to think about, all right, my physical safety. And that kind of stuff is more about not making yourself a target. And so I try to dress like I'm dressing now for the most part. If people are listening on audio, I just have a, you know, surf shirt on or whatever, sleeveless. And I try to blend in, try not to look like a gringo as much as I can. I've made a lot of efforts to develop a decent Spanish speaking accent, so I don't sound out of place. So these, you know, just awareness of different scenarios, that is very important. So how would you walk around New York City? Well, if you're, you know, most people are oblivious these days with their headphones in, and especially women, you have to be more careful. And so just developing that type of awareness is important. I think that everybody should learn self-defense and really mentally prepare what it might mean if you had to physically hurt someone else, because a lot of people are not ready for that. They might, you know, think it would be cool to punch someone in the face and shatter their jaw, but there are legal implications of that. There are, you know, mental implications of that. So yeah, there's a lot to consider when it comes to keeping yourself safe, but just situational awareness. And yeah, I do encourage people to try to get out of their comfort zone a little bit, but that develops that confidence.
Yeah. And I guess that goes to what I was talking about when, you know, a lot of people are going to Austin or other cities in the U.S. That's where they start. You know, people grew up one place and that's a little bit out of their comfort zone. And I think that probably outside of the comfort zone will be, you know, in outside of the U.S. probably soon. We'll see how things go. And then by that time, I'll be in outer space. But no, I don't know. I think that's good advice. And yeah, I think honestly, you know, just as far as self sovereignty, self-responsibility, in general, it doesn't matter where you are. You know, like you said, I mean, I definitely recommend people that take, and especially, you know, women to take self-defense courses and be, you know, situational awareness, know how they look, because that's it really what I've in my life, that's what it seems to be a lot of is if people want to take advantage of you or they see you as an easy target. And that is not necessarily because you're small in stature or whatever. I mean, I'm not a big guy, right? But people don't usually mess with me if I'm an older person is not paying attention, drunk, looking at the ground or something, they'll get pickpocketed or something in a second. So, you know, I definitely think, yeah, like you're saying, just, you know, not with the earbuds in all the time, recognizing when people are walking close to you, and just the fact that you're looking around and you don't look, I don't know, like silly, like a clown or something.
Sure.
And people are less apt to mess with you. So, yeah. I didn't ask you, how old are you?
I'm 34.
34. Okay. So you're just a little bit younger than me. That's cool. So I guess I'm a millennial. I don't know. When is the cutoff for millennial?
Well, the broad range, I think, goes down to 1980, but between 80 and 85, there's some debate. But
wow. So millennials are like, they can be almost 40 by now. Jeez.
Sure.
That's cool. And so you, it seems like you have a lot of stuff geared after the millennial audience. I like that. A lot of the people that did want to do are more interested in the international investing and stuff like that were the older crowd, but I do want to talk to the younger crowd as well. And give them some options to just going to college and getting a career and all that kind of stuff. So, we didn't talk about that. What about college? What are your views on college? Do you think that if somebody is graduating high school now, should they be going to college right now?
That's a good question. If you're asking for my COVID answer, I know you're thinking about broader, but would I want to be in a college right now in dorms with a bunch of people? Probably not.
But you're doing it online.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are doing it online. A lot of schools, though, are. I mean, I think they're going to try to play college football, which is a whole nother story. But look, I can't make everybody's decision for them. I don't know people's situation that might be listening. And to me, you don't need college, right? You can, what's the famous line from Good Will Hunting where Matt Damon meets the guy in the bar and he's like, oh, I could have got that fucking I don't know if I can swear. Education for, $4.32 at the local library and late fees or whatever. I butchered that quote, by the way. But that's, look, with all the online learning and free resources and Udemy and TED Talks and everything that you can go and start to invest in now, is that piece, do you need that piece of paper that tells other people that you're smart? You might, right? And I'll tell you, it happened to me recently. I thought, okay, there's a little downturn in the travel industry, and I've been thinking about wanting to teach a course for a while. And I said, maybe I'll just apply to be an adjunct professor somewhere. And of course, still running my company. And there I saw, you had to have an MBA to teach at this business school. I was like, all right, well, screw that idea. I'll just go on and teach a course online where I don't need it and I could probably make way more money. So, but I have the skills. I've built those skills myself to be able to do that on my own as an entrepreneur. I don't need to go the normal, the regular route where I rely on somebody else. So if that's for you, if you are entrepreneurial minded, then no, or maybe you go to community college and get the basics. But also really, I think going to university is about the social aspect of things. And so you know, that was pivotal for me and joining these organizations and, you know, being a leader on campus and stuff like that. But you can be a leader in your own community now. You can find organizations to be part of, meetups to go to, people to network. And so that's the even more valuable thing, right? You go to Harvard Business School, you're paying for the network. It doesn't matter what's in the books. So a lot of things to consider. But if you can go a non-conventional route, I absolutely encourage people to.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the biggest arguments, not only for college, but for regular, you know, public schooling and all this is, you know, a lot of people talk about socialization and networking and all this. And that was one of the biggest things. They say, well, you got to have social, you got to have networking, you got to solve that. Well, now if it's going to be online or you're going to have all this really social distancing or whatever, well, that goes out the window, right? So that was one, I don't know, that was always seemed to me one of the biggest excuses for why you need that. So if that's not even there, then what's the point? Yeah, so that's cool. I think, man, this might be, you know, I wrote a blog post with a friend of mine who is an economist, and probably 7, 8, 6, 7 years ago, and we were just talking about how overbloated the college industry was in general. I mean, it just really seemed like a bubble. Well, you know, the prices just going up and up, people taking on all this debt, and that there would be a certain point where they just, you know, price themselves out of the market, and people would come to realize that the price that they're paying, even if they're just borrowing it, it's not worth what they're going to get. I mean, it's got to come to a point where people just, you know, they stop getting as new applicants. And I think that, man, I think we're there. I think we're there. So we'll see what happens to the whole, you know, college industry. I think it really could be a bloodbath moving forward. I'm not sure exactly when. And it might be, you know, one point where everybody just realizes, oh, man, I got this paper and there's no jobs. And, you know, I have a ton of debt to pay back. And, I mean, we're talking about over $1 trillion in debt, you know, more than credit cards. And yeah, they might just be a point where they just don't, they can't pay it back. And I don't know. It's really a bad situation. And I don't think I'd want to be in the, in that industry right now, as far as, you know, I think that it's kind of gone up, and I think they've had their heyday. So we'll see what happens, you know?
Yeah. And James, that financial decision is up to everyone. If, you know, somebody's parents can afford to pay $250,000 or whatever to send you to a top-notch school and that's nothing to them, okay, well then, yeah, go for it, I guess, right? But I'd rather, if I was 18, I'd rather go out and make money rather than go into debt.
Give me the 250 grand to start a business or something. Or buy a
house. Sure. No, a lot of ways to slice it.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that business. So this is pretty impressive. You're, you know, you really got going, right? You're with the under 30 experiences. Is that right? I mean, that how you really got going as far as entrepreneurship?
Yeah. Before this, my business partner and I, Jared O'Toole, we owned under30ceo.com. And so that was really our first venture out of school. But, you know, we grew that to a six-figure business. But Under 30 Experiences is really where we took off.
Okay. And what's up with that? What is Under 30 Experiences?
Yeah, so we're a travel company for young people ages 21 to 35. We operate trips all over the world, from Thailand and Bali, Indonesia, to Scotland, Ireland, Spain, down to Machu Picchu, Brazil. I've talked a lot about Costa Rica. Yeah, we have trips all over the world to like 20 different countries. And so you people who want to come and they don't necessarily want to go to a place, but they don't necessarily want to go alone, or they want to do something. Now in the United States, we're launching national park trips. Like, hey, maybe camping is a little bit out of your comfort zone doing that on your own, or you just don't have the time to plan it or anything like that, yeah, you can join one of our trips and then be connected with the community of people who also enjoy the outdoors.
That's great. Those are a lot of fun. You know, I did something, I mean, it wasn't that simple, that same thing, but I went to university in Madrid, and they had this company called Busabout. And have you ever heard of that?
It sounds familiar.
Okay, it's a pretty big company, but they sell you. So it's a lot of people, and they're almost all like visitors and stuff, and that have the summer off. And you buy so many stops, and they just have a bus, and it goes all around Europe, and you hang out with the same group, and you stop at different hostels and stuff. And yeah, it's really cool, because especially when you're young and you're a backpacker, you want to go see these different places. You don't necessarily want to go by yourself. And so I had a freaking blast, man. I mean, so it sounds very similar, but just like individual trips, right?
Yeah, the trips are really fun. But yeah, you could just go on our website and say, all right, I want to go to Belize, which will hopefully open back up for tourism soon. And yeah, you join a group of maybe 12, 15 people, and you say, okay, yeah, that's where I want to go. And this Belize trip, for example, is just 5 days, but we take you to the coolest spots that we know. And, you know, you go in and swim with the sharks and go snorkeling and go cave tubing and all the stuff that's, you know, it's definitely doable to put together yourself. But if you wanted more of a group experience where you get to make friends along the way, that's a big part of it as well. So yes, it's a similar type of thing.
Yeah. And are you still going? I mean, have you had to stop some of the things or put some precautions in, or how's that?
Yeah, it's a very difficult time for the travel industry, yeah, of course. So we had to halt most of our trips through the end of the year internationally. We have been rolling out for late 2020 and 2021 USA trips. And so we have 6 itineraries right now from, you know, Joshua Tree, Zion, Bryce Canyon National Park, you know, Acadia, Maine, the Great Smoky Mountains of North Carolina, Yosemite. And so trying to get people to explore their own backyards. But yeah, it's a tricky time right now, but we want to take the proper precautions as far as wearing masks, social distancing, disinfecting the buses, and just trying to stay off the beaten path and away from other people. So that's like, these national parks are half full right now compared to most seasons where, yeah, everybody and their mother are out there in July in Yosemite Valley. So yeah, we're just trying to stay as safe as we can while still being open for business, like so many small businesses are going through right now.
Yeah. So it says here you are on your bio that you're a shareholder in the Green Bay Packers. How'd that happen?
So Green Bay Packers are the only American football team that's owned by the town. And so my dad and my grandfather are from Wisconsin. So they had a public offering, and my dad and my grandfather both own shares because they're diehard Green Bay Packers fan, and you get to own a piece of the team, and they've both passed down their shares to me. And so I can vote in the shareholders elections and stuff like that. And yeah, so it's just like another level of hardcore fandom where you're actually invested in your team.
Cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right. Well, maybe if you just want to let people know, they might be, you know, we have podcast listeners, obviously, that tuned in. So you have your own podcast. Maybe let people know about your podcast, some people you've had on, and what you talk about there.
Sure. So podcast is called the Live Different Podcast. It's on business, performance, travel, health, And it's basically just my playground where I can reach out to anybody I really admire and invite them to come on and have a conversation for an hour. So I've had people from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, NBA legend, to, you know, a lot of doctors. Stephen Gundry is one guy that I just had on there. He's from one of the blue zones up in Loma Linda University, where people live to be over 100 years of age. I bring on digital nomads, of course, and people who are building businesses and traveling and just living life on their own terms. And we're about to come out with a new series called the Millennial Travel Podcast. And that's going to be right there at the Live Different Podcast, the podcast within the podcast, I guess. And I've interviewed a ton of people who are traveling the world, again, living life on their own terms. They could be bloggers or YouTubers or photographers, any type of business owner who are just, you know, they're doing something that's meaningful to them and being able to support themselves in a really unconventional way. So yeah, that's coming out this month along with the book.
All right, Matt. Very cool. So, people should go to mattwilson.co, and you've got all your stuff there, right? Or what's what else?
Yeah, are you looking out for? Absolutely. I mean, if anybody wants to interact with me, Matt Wilson TV on social media, yes, send me a message on Twitter or Instagram or something like that, and then the Millennial Travel Guidebook is coming out on the 13th of August. And I know it's a terrible time to launch a travel book, but I want to get it out there and do my best. So I'm going to put it on ebook for 99 cents. So it's available for pre-order now. Just want people to read it.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. All right, Matt. Very cool. Thanks a lot for coming on and talking with me. And I'll talk to you soon.
You're very welcome, James. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for joining us for the Borderless Podcast. Traveling, investing, and living beyond borders.